building was built in 1974. The architect was a guy named John Carl Warnecke, and it's 29 floors. The floors are 18 feet tall, and they can hold about 200 to 300 pounds per square foot on each floor. John Carl Warnecke, just fun fact, he also designed John F. Kennedy's gravesite, and he's kind of known for this architectural concept called contextualism, which basically is architecture that's supposed to be designed with, like, attention to and respect for its surroundings, which I guess this kind of blends in, not really.
It's a bit like an eyesore. It's an interesting eyesore.
It's an interesting eyesore. It's kind of a terrifying building, but it was built for AT&T's long lines division, so that's like for long distance telephone stuff. So it was initially created as a switching station for like telephone calls. And you know, by 1974, a lot of that equipment didn't really require a lot of switchboard operators or really humans. So in some ways, the design of this building, the like total lack of windows, is related to just the fact that like it's not optimized for people. It's optimized for the machines inside the building.
Is it still used for machinery though now?
It is. It is still an AT&T building. Someone I know who did a lot of work for AT&T's archives told me that it's not really internet stuff. It's still a lot of like large like phone. So like large companies that have big phone systems in their buildings like will run their phone. Their phone systems will connect through here. It also was designed kind of without windows as a form of like reinforcement. So it was built to be self-sufficient for 2 weeks in wartime conditions and be resistant to nuclear attack. Whether that's... I mean, it hasn't been tested yet, so I'd rather not find out, but...
If ever it happens, you come here, right?
I guess, yeah.
So now you know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, assuming it doesn't... I guess it... Unless someone tried to knock it down, but that seems pretty hard. So there was one... There's one kind of good story about like a time where something went kind of wrong in this building that I found. So in 1991, it had been designed to be totally self-sufficient. And so they had this agreement with, so it meant that they had a lot of like backup generators and stuff in the building. And so they had this agreement with the like power company where if the power company requested for them to like switch like from like using utility power to the on-site generators, they'd do it. It's called like a load shedding agreement. Basically, it's a way of kind of like, I don't know, letting the power company redistribute power in the grid and stuff. And so this was like a pretty routine procedure, but normally after that happened, they were supposed to sort of like go like check all of the equipment, power supplies, like to make sure there nothing was broken. But this one time in 91, the people who usually did those sorts of visual checks of the equipment weren't at the actual building. They were training technicians at a different AT&T building that's in Midtown that we're not going to go see today because it's too far away, but I can tell you where it is. But so there weren't any, like the alarms that said that like something was going wrong weren't detected until it was like too late. So the central switch of the building was completely disabled. Over 5 million calls were blocked. A bunch of Federal Aviation Administration private lines were interrupted, which meant that air traffic control in about 398 airports in the northeastern United States stopped working. So, you know, nice. That story is maybe a nice reminder that even though this building wasn't necessarily designed for humans, it still kind of needs humans in some capacity. You can't automate everything. Do people want to take any more pictures or like look around a little more? We'll do that quickly before we move.